Medical gaslighting is real, and it happens to a lot of thyroid patients. I've experienced it myself, as you've heard in some of my recent episodes where I share my personal Hashimoto's recovery story. And as a health coach, I hear this all the time. My doctor won't do a complete thyroid panel, even though I'm struggling. My doctor won't discuss different medication options with me, even though what I'm taking now clearly isn't working. My doctor keeps telling me it's normal for me to feel so tired and overweight and blah at my age, but I know there's something else going on. I hear this all the time. And this has some really big ripple effects, especially in terms of mental health. Because another common refrain that I hear from coaching clients is, I can tell my thyroid medication isn't working for me and needs to be changed or adjusted somehow, but my doctor keeps refusing to address that and instead offering me antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication, sleep aids, proton pump inhibitors, you name it. And while these medications can serve an important purpose when properly used, they can also come with things like serious long-term side effects. And a lot of patients don't understand that before starting to take them. And too often, these band-aid prescriptions completely miss the root cause of the problem, like, say, being on the wrong type or dosage of thyroid medication, or having an underlying infection or gut health issue or nutrient deficiencies, just to name a few examples. So this is the issue we're going to be discussing today with two special guests, both of whom are mental health professionals and both of whom are on a crusade to inform patients about medical gaslighting and those ripple effects that it can have on your life and well-being. So we're walking straight into the heart of the fire today, and knowing my guests, we won't be pulling any punches. This is going to be a fun and interesting conversation. So let's dig in. Hello, thyroid drivers. Welcome back to another episode of Thyroid Healthy Bites, a weekly podcast dedicated to helping you live well and eat well so you can feel well. I'm Ginny Mahar, your host and the face behind the apron at hypothyroidchef.com. All right, friends, welcome back to the show and thank you for tuning in today. I'm here with my old friend and fellow podcaster, Dr. Tara Lynn Sell, and that means we're going to have a fun conversation. And this episode is probably going to have a little E next to it. So great to see you.
Likely.
So great to see you, Dr. Tara Lynn, and have you on Thyroid Healthy Bites.
Yes, I'm happy to be back. It's been a while since I've been on a podcast with you, Jenny, and so I'm really excited to be on this one with you and my friend Jen at the same time. It's going
Yeah,
to be
well,
fun.
we've both done a lot of different projects. So you were on
Oh, yeah.
my former podcast, Thyroid Refresh TV, but I think, yeah, this is your first time on Thyroid Healthy Bites. So,
It is, and I'm
and
excited.
we have a trio today. Joining us is Dr. Tara Lynn's co-host of a brand new podcast called The Gaslit Truth, Jen Schmitz, or as she's known on TikTok, Therapist Jen. I'm so
Therapist Jen.
excited to meet you, Jen, and to get to know you on today's episode.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me, Ginny. I have to say the little E, that actually makes me feel comfortable knowing that there's going to be a little E. So that thank you for bringing that into play, because
It's a
that just safe
fits
place for
me.
everyone here.
Yeah. Well, we're
It
giving
fits
the
me.
listeners fair warning. We're going to let her rip. So
Good. No, I'm happy to be here, and thank you for trusting me enough to come into this world and chat with you ladies who really truly are the epitome of understanding podcasting. And you've worked together before, so I get to be like the fifth wheel, and I'm gonna infiltrate, if that's okay.
perfect. Yeah. Well, I love it that we're obviously all Midwestern gals. I'm from Michigan. Dr. Tara
I
Lynn,
didn't know that. We're from
Minnesota, right?
Wisconsin. Yeah. No, we're from Wisconsin.
Oh, you're Sconnies. Okay. Oh,
You
you
sound Minnesotan-y, but
we
no.
kind of sound like Minnesota, but it is
Yeah, not quite truly
there. Yeah. It is
Wisconsin. Yes.
Wisconsin. We're gonna talk about our mom and drinking pop and
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Lots of cheese, too. There's
Yeah,
lots of
lots of cheese.
cheese.
Yes. Awesome. Well, I'm excited to hear more about your new show. I thought maybe we could just start there with kind of what brought the two of you together as mental health professionals on this shared crusade. How did
Oh
this
my
happen?
gosh.
Here we go.
go
This
back.
story goes back. It goes way back to 1945. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
it
back
goes
when
back.
The wheel.
Yeah, back with the wheel.
The wheel.
It goes back, what, 15 years?
About 15 maybe? Years.
Mm-hmm. 15 yeah. years. Yeah. So Jen and I practiced together in the prison system. And she was, well, we were both baby therapists. I was just older than her. It was still my first therapist gig. And then I left and took a, what, 11-year hiatus mm-hmm. before Jen reached out to me again and said that she was ready to leave.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was about a year ago now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Jen joined me in practice. And after that, we have a lot of conversations to be had about our experiences there and the gaslighting of mental health. And suddenly we're like, you know what? I think we need to put our thoughts on the podcast and hopefully people will want to hear it. You know, I think part of that came from our TikTok following, because for some reason I worked my way into some controversy on TikTok, and that's where I've been sitting for about a year in controversy there, but people like it and they want to hear it. And I think it's been very validating to so many people. So Jen and I were like, you know what? I think we just need to take these and have larger conversations on a podcast. And so the Gaslit Truth was mm-hmm. born.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one idea funneled into another. So we look at gaslighting from many different, like the medical field, the mental health field, right? We look at how we are gaslit from marketing, right? Mm-hmm. And from big business and big food. And I mean, we shared our story about being gaslit even in our careers and the sure thing of what yes. we were, the dream that was delivered to us as new clinicians, working in a state entity, and how undreamy that was really, truly.
Yeah. Jen,
how taxing it really was. Yes.
I'd love to hear more about that if you're willing to share.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, like Dr. Terrellin, we were both in the same state system in different facilities, working in different correctional facilities. I worked in multiple different ones over the last 15 years, and in different roles. I was in roles as supervisor and also in roles as a therapist, right? So I had my hands in everything. I worked with the male population. I worked with the female population. I worked with the most significantly mentally ill men, which is what Dr. Terrellin and I, where we started, funneled my way into working with the most significantly mentally ill women. So it was kind of one of my niches. The therapy interventions we were trained in placed us in spaces with the most ill individuals. So the most,
I want to add to this, Jen, because I think some of the most ill individuals were other employees that we worked with, you know,
was
a lot of mental illness going on with employees as well.
There was. And when I think back about some of the reasons I stepped away, it necessarily wasn't my patients. At all. There was a lot of the staff and then the system, the way mm-hmm. the system functioned itself. And that really started to get to me. My niche and Dr. Terrellin's as well, we were with populations that were, those that were extremely personality disordered, very mentally ill. You know, we had a lot of schizophrenic patients, major depression, bipolar disorder, significant self-harming, significant addiction. Trauma is an understatement. That was almost every single client in the prison facilities engaged had traumatic events in their lives. So we were in it. I mean, even all the way down to psychopathology, we were in it. And so her and I had a lot of similarities with that. And so she stepped away, and over time I stayed in, and I moved my way around in different facilities. And it got to a point probably about a year and a half to about 2 years ago, almost, when I reached out to Terry, where I knew that if I did not step away, it was going to consume me. My family life was being depleted. My mental health was depleted. Now I know through some great assessments that I had zero adrenal functioning, and my cortisol was shot. Vicarious trauma was a thing. I learned to shut the whole world off and I didn't bring anything home. And I was very proud of that. And by doing that for years and years and years and years, I started to lose myself. It just hit me one day that I can't do it anymore. And so for me, I'm like, well, what am I good at? Okay, let's see. I can talk. I know I can do that. I'm a therapist. Okay. Like I got therapy. I've been a supervisor for years and was being groomed to be the next deputy warden. And I'm like, I can't do that stuff anymore. That's too stressful. So I went back to my fallback, which was being a therapist. And I thought, well, I could just do some private practice. And so I reached back out to Dr. Terrellin and here we are back together now. And she's like, why don't you just come on in with me. You bring it in. And it was very full circle because 15 years ago, she was my first mentor. Right. And so here we are in a full circle and I'm like working hand in hand with her now. And somehow those stars came right back where they need to, which is crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah. How cool. Many different, you know, braid, like threads going on there. Yeah. And brought you both back together. Cause I know Dr. Terrellin, you've done all kinds of things over the years too, but all sort of in the, you know, there's this, I have a background in writing and in writing, you talk about the golden thread. What is the golden thread that goes all the way through the story, you know, and it sounds like you both share that like a similar golden thread.
Yes.
That has been.
I feel like Jen is just the younger version of me. Like I feel it's so funny because we're at very similar. We've been at very similar phases of our career throughout this because I was a late starter and she was an early adopter. We'll say. So it's been really cool and it's been really fun to work with her because I feel like we have the same jokes and we also understand the whole gaslighting of the system because we've both been very oppressed, I believe is the best word to say, with some of the ideas that we have presented to help people feel better, especially in systems. And we now know that, you know, that type of change is all but impossible to make in a system, not just a prison system, but in any large system, right? Mm-hmm. So as individual practitioners, we're able to make larger changes. And I just think this podcast is a way for us to explore those changes. And we're not always going to agree. And I can't wait for the day that we don't.
It's going to be great. Podcast. Like, exactly. That's the episode people are probably like, listen to.
You're going to want to listen to that. But I think it's a great way to kind of share it because I think the mental health space in and of itself is kind of a scary place for people to be who don't think like everybody else, right? That it's in the space. So it's been interesting, an interesting ride because I'll just refer to TikTok because again, it's been controversial. And about a year ago, I had a couple of videos that were really controversial and I was like, oh my God, like I feel sick to my stomach over these things. Like I'd never set out to be that. But oddly, I was getting lots of messages from clinicians who were like, thank you for speaking out. I got a message from a group psychiatric practice saying, we've all watched your videos and we are rooting from you from behind. And literally said, but we're too scared to do it ourselves. And I was like,
whoa,
what does this mean? You know, what does this mean?
Goosebumps.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was motivating and scary at the same time, you know? So this podcast is motivating and scary at the same time,
It is. Yeah.
It's very scary.
Yeah. Cause we're diving into things people don't want to talk about, similar to Eugenie and your experience, right? And looking at the way the medical field has failed us in ways and yet people don't have that voice and don't feel safe and comfortable enough to say something, right? Kind of like that psychiatric group. And so you sit in the back and you kind of just watch it happening. And I think Terry, you and I were just in that space of, we just can't sit back anymore. Like the sitting back, and we never really have been sit backers, if that's a word. No. Like we really have it. Like
no, we're
controversies.
Not.
Controversies exciting. Like I'm just like, yes. Okay, bring it on, right? But this is a bigger level of it because we're challenging. I mean, some of the things we are challenging is our education, And the practices that we have and the basis, we talk about the basis of psychotherapy and the founding fathers of our whole practice and how gaslighting it was. And so we're bringing to the table things that are extremely controversial, and it is scary because this will make a lot of friction.
Yeah. Well, friction. And yeah. As we have these bigger conversations, like, psychology in and of itself and psychiatry is kind of gross. Like, it has some really gross history to it. And suddenly that history is gone. Like, we're not even talking about that history as if it never happened. And it's interesting to me because throughout my master's degree and my PhD, there was never a history of psychology course outside of like Freud or, you know, some of the bigger voices that you hear, right? There was never, they didn't talk about how controversial Freud was, my goodness sakes. And that we definitely didn't go back before that time, you know, to understand the torture that was put upon people. We didn't talk about any of that as if it never happened, as if we're just skipping right over that part of history.
Nothing. Eugenics was never a thing.
Yes. Never happened. I mean, eugenics was pretty well invented by psychology.
The psychiatric field. Yes. Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about that anymore. And we're not talking about the parallels that we still have in place with that. You know, it might not be as disgusting and torturous, but then I go, but is it? Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know? And so then when I see all these women, well, my story with thyroid, similar to Ginny's, I'm sure, is that, you know, I was offered in 20 minutes an antidepressant, a stimulant, and a sleep aid for my thyroid because my ranges fell normal, but I felt terrible. And I'm like, just that stuff alone happens to so many people. Women are at higher group that it happens to all the time. And I'm like, listen, women's health is a thing. It's not just all psychiatric, right? It's not just all in our heads, but I'm kind of digressing all over the place. But this is why I'm so passionate about these topics and this podcast and so excited, because I feel like we can give a voice to so many through controversial things that shouldn't be controversial. It should not be controversial to talk about the history of psychology. That shouldn't be a controversial thing. That should be a well-known thing. It shouldn't be controversial to talk about informed consent when it comes to medication or interventions. And yet it is. Like, I don't understand how that is controversial. That's ethical, you know, that's the ethical thing to do. But yet we're talking about it as if it's like this huge controversy, you know? So it's fascinating.
I think about that word indoctrination a lot, you know, where we're indoctrinated with a belief system. And that's part of becoming a doctor, is being indoctrinated with this, you know, these evidence-based standards and standards of care. And, you know, I know as someone who has experienced medical gaslighting, it's like, I'm angry for what happened to me, but I don't think my doctor is a bad person. I believe people go to medical school and get these trainings and certifications and licenses because they want to help people.
Yeah.
But they find themselves so often in these systems that are, there's a lot of problematic dogma. And it's like, if you don't go along with the indoctrinated belief system, you know, there's a lot of pressure, like peer pressure, to go along. And I've heard this, you know, if it gives the two of you any confidence in going out there to have these very important conversations publicly on your podcast, because, hey, this is how change happens. It's the dialogue. These are important conversations. And I mean, I just, my nature, and I'm a Scorpio, I'm like, I'm here for it. Let's talk about the truth. I do not shy away from that. Ever. Yes. And I know it's challenging for people sometimes, but we're not going to sugarcoat things, because we do have to shine a light on things if we want them to be different. But what I was starting to say was other, you know, people I've had on the show, one of whom was the former president of the American Thyroid Association, one of the leading thyroid researchers, has come out about this and said, I regret how many hundreds of patients, he was a practicing clinician too, how many hundreds of patients I told, you're fine because your thyroid levels are in the normal range. And he started to get letters from these women. He said the two that he writes about in his book, Rethinking Hypothyroidism Treatment, his name's Dr. Antonio Bianco. Great book, highly recommend, and really commend him for his courage in coming out. I mean, this is someone who is one of the leading researchers, like he is in the system and saying this has to change. These patients are not being served. And what changed things for him were two different teachers, both saying the same thing. I am not okay. I know my labs are normal. This medication isn't working for me. And these two different teachers had written to him and said, I've had to quit my job. I can't work anymore. And he went, wait a minute, what's happening here? And he started to look more closely and go, we need to change these standards of care and we need to talk about it. And when he proposed to his colleagues that they start maybe some focus groups and bring in patients to discuss this, they literally laughed at him and said, no.
We've been laughed at.
Oh, boy. Like, I just get goosebumps on my right arm when you say that because I'm putting myself
like
in
all
these
sorts of uncomfy over here.
Multiple meetings of like just being dismissed or that idea. We wouldn't even consider that. Yes. Get yelled at by professional staff.
But we've talked about this idea that historically we've probably done harm. You know, without knowing that we were doing harm. So it's not like a purposeful, unintentionally doing harm. And that's the story you shared with that thyroid doctor too. Like same thing, unintentionally. Mm-hmm. We've got kind of, you get like a fixed mindset about things, right? Mm-hmm. Like we've got a fixed mindset based on what we've been educated to do, to believe, mm-hmm. to think and feel. And you just kind of move in those channels and you forget about critical thinking. You forget that you can do that. And you also don't become the best advocate for your patient, you know? Mm-hmm. So we've talked about how we have probably done some harm. And I think about it as you were referencing, you know, your labs are fine, you're fine, blah, blah, blah. You know, how many times did somebody say to me, on meds, I feel worse. And your response, because as clinicians, we are the right-hand man of psychiatry. People don't want to believe that, but we are. And your response is go back to psychiatry, maybe get a med change or a new medication instead of, did you start feeling worse after you were on this medication?
Right.
Maybe it's the medication making you feel worse.
Yes.
But we can't talk about that, you know, or you feel like you're going to end your life, but you never felt that way before until you were on these medications. That, but it can't be the medication. We can't say, we can't say that.
Or write it out. Just keep it in your system a little longer. You just got started.
You just have to get used to it.
All the times I said that to people, not taking into account and being inquisitive about this idea that it could be something else. This is not
or
right
a medical
for them.
Problem or something
right.
medical.
Right.
That was
and just
going
don't
on.
Write it out. It's only been three, 4 weeks and people can't speak. They've got terrible akathisia. They can't get out of bed. Their suicidal ideation, which is why we started it in the first place, skyrocketed, right? And now I'm having to keep you safe. I can't even let you go back to your room and I got to keep you in a special space. And it all started when we started this medication. And yet that's the savior, right? That was the thing. Just give it a little longer. It'll save.
Yep.
But we were taught that. Like that was what that was the golden glove, right? That was handed to us. And you both said it well in terms of like whether it's indoctrine, whether it's that belief system, you get stuck in that yourself and you're not trying to do harm. But when we lose some of that inquisition and we're so focused on that sure thing and on what will be the thing that works, we discount the human experience. We don't listen. We don't hear our patients. We listen to them, but we don't really hear them. We give advice that doesn't go along with what they're really trying to say to us. And when you think about that, it's like they were screaming for help, some which couldn't even stay alive and trying to end their lives. And it's, and yet it was, we need just a little more time on this. Don't skip your meds. We're going to go get a commitment on you if you don't keep taking this medication, because we're going to have to involuntarily commit you then, because you can't keep yourself safe. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we did harm. It was not volitional and knowing, but we were not inquisitive enough and able enough to have enough of a voice, even when we tried. And now we can, right? But we didn't. And so that is a good thing to bring up, Terry, because that's one of our first things we talk about in one of our first episodes is we lay that out. We lay the humanity piece out. We're honest about it. We're very humble about it, because that's real. Because we were there. Yeah. And still are there in some ways.
Sad. There, in parts of myself, it makes me upset with myself that because I couldn't make change, you know, my mental health was suffering. I think it now, looking back, I think it was because I was so out of alignment with what I knew needed to be done and how far I could go to do it. So when I left, I was also a supervisor. And that's when I really got out of alignment. And I literally jumped ship because I knew that I couldn't make another impact, that I could not do it by myself. So instead of staying for the battle, you know, I left, and I had to make that decision based on my own mental well-being. Number one, that was paramount, because I was in a bad anxiety state that I had never experienced before. So I had to kind of make a choice, me or the system, right? Yep. And I made a choice for myself and my family to get out of there. But, you know, in retrospect, and all this conversation is retrospective, is that I now feel bad, but I'm also talking from a very empowered place now, you know, mm-hmm. not then. I do feel bad that, you know, I left and I didn't fight harder to make change that needed to be made, but I don't even know if that's a possibility. You know, I mean, Jen was still there up till a year ago and she couldn't do it. You know, well, so I guess what makes me believe I can, you know,
yeah.
I guess we're doing it now. So if any of you were my clients way back then, you know, please listen and know this comes from the heart that, you know, we probably did not serve you well in the situation that we had. And I, again, not intentionally, but probably not. And I feel like that conversation needs to be had, you know,
it's brave and it's important to be able to say those things too. Yeah. I mean, even just as a health coach talking about nutrition, it's like, that's something that's always changing to be able to say, well, this is what we previously thought and let's allow discourse. Mm-hmm. Let's continue to seek information and knowledge and know better and do better and evolve in our thinking. And you bring up so many good points, you know, thinking about how you pivoted and were sort of able to leave this system that you didn't align with anymore. You know, I also think about the people out there who have, you know, hundreds of thousands in student loans for med school who maybe don't have the option to even make that pivot. And so, yeah, I mean, having these conversations, I don't have them with any sort of like, oh, doctors bad, conventional medicine bad. I mean, the system is flawed and all, you know, I think that that's what we're really talking about here, but I cannot believe, you know, and I'm a person who just, I think the best of people, and sure, that's bitten me in the ass a few times, but I can't believe that anyone would go to the incredible trouble and time and expense of any kind of, you know, medical school, higher education, master's degree, you know, and go to that thinking, I'm just going to become a voice box for big pharma and psychologically manipulate my patients into taking medications they don't need or don't understand and give them faulty advice that's going to keep them sick while also telling them nothing is wrong with that. Yes. No one intends to do that.
Right.
That intention isn't there. But I, you know, as you've pointed out, that does happen in the system. And Jen, you kind of, I sort of thought this was a good segue into maybe talking about, you know, thyroid patients who like get offered these mental health medications. I'm probably not using the right terminology. Please correct me, but who get offered these mental health medications for a physiological issue, you know what? And I know your background is in dealing with people who are maybe further along the mental health spectrum in terms of severity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are some of the, for the listeners of this podcast who might just be having like, oh, I just feel kind of anxious. I feel blah, I'm tired. You know, what are some of those ripple effects? And you kind of touched on this a little bit, but can we maybe go into that deeper about some of those ripple effects of what can happen when we're given something like that without having that informed consent, without realizing what some of the long-term consequences could be, and without even really addressing the root cause of what's actually going on underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And Terry, I want you to tag team me on this one too, because you're going to have a little bit of a lens that I don't have as much on, but I can actually speak from a professional standpoint and a personal standpoint on this one too. And the idea of when we don't get to the root physiological cause, right? And we are putting a medication on a symptom when we don't really necessarily know what's causing that symptom. So I tie in what you said, Terry. You look at the piece with your thyroid, right? Mm-hmm. And so there were medical pieces to this that were happening with your body, but the outward expression of what you were saying, as well as the lab work that was done, you know, it wasn't matching. So we're going to put the medication on what the symptoms were that you had. Which could you share some of those, Terry, that you were experiencing?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, so much fatigue. And I would talk to people about it. Like, it felt like my eyebrows were sinking down my face. like I couldn't keep my eyes open. Lack of libido, of course, like, low stress tolerance. Like I just, and shutting down, like literally shutting down and just wanted to sleep all the time. Those were the biggest ones that I can remember that were the most impactful. Well, one more, like I could go and go and go until I couldn't anymore, until I sat down and then I was done. So as long as I was upright and moving around, I was good. If I sat down, I was probably asleep, you know?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So two different classes, like you've got the medical component and the mental health component. So what was heard, because the lab work looks good, right? What was heard though, was the mental health symptoms, right?
Yeah, and so depressed.
You're depressed. So we need to give you something for that, give you a stimulant, give you something for sleep. We're going to give you all these things. Right. And so when you're talking about that, like the etiology of something, right. And what, where it can take itself, the ripple effect then comes when there's an excellent example, right. And the medications are offered. And a lot of times people take those, right. And so then not only did we put a treatment on the what was not the problem, okay, because we didn't listen enough to the patient. But then on top of that comes the side effects that happen then either in the beginning or throughout the course of the medication treatment, or then of course the withdrawal effects that happen if you try to get off. So personally for me, then I can talk about there being a problem. For me, I started on medications when I was very young. I started on an antidepressant when I was 18 years old. I had a life event, and that life event sucked. And it was so dumb. Like Terry asked me about this when I was doing all my work with her. She goes, well, why the hell did you go on Lexapro 20 years ago in the first place? And I'm like, I think my
remember.
Boyfriend, I think
yeah.
my boyfriend,
she goes, I don't really know. I don't even know.
I think there was some guy and he was an ass and I was depressed. Like that was, she's right. And
that
so
was it.
That was it. And I remember, I vaguely remember it. I vaguely remember all of that, but I do remember the conversation with the physician going, here's what you need to know. And informed consent was take this, this will help you. And here's just a few side effects you could have, Jen. And I remember part of that. And it's kind of vague, right? Because I was like 18, but yeah. And so fast forward, and then all these things start to happen. And I start to have side effects of these medications, but I didn't know they were side effects, right? And I just went along with them. Some of them were blatant, obvious. And I had, my libido was gone, completely gone. And so that to me wasn't blatantly obvious. And every time I go back into the doctor, I would talk about that. Yeah, my mood's great. I feel good. I have no sex drive. Like, it's ruining my life. Okay, Jen, well, there aren't necessarily pills for women yet that are that we, I can prescribe you yet. Remember like that conversation, right? But yeah, right. Yeah, like the female Viagra, yeah. Like at that time. But I remember her saying, but I can get you I got a sex therapist you can go to and you can try this. So here this whole time, I was the problem. So when you say ripple effect, right? Like that's one that people don't think about, but I just kept being defined as the problem when really the problem was this medication. And so what I was never asked was, you know, maybe it's time to go off of it. Maybe it's time that we look at a different treatment plan for you because you've been coming back 15 years in a row and I keep prescribing it for you and you're doing well. So at what point do we hit maintenance land, which in my brain is maybe we don't need this anymore. But that wasn't a conversation, right? So and then part of informed consent that didn't happen with another ripple effect is what I'm going through right now, which is pretty significant withdrawal effects, trying to do a hyperbolic taper off of this. And it's horrible. And so that is yet another ripple effect, right? And so I have also had some medical pieces that had come up with me that were directly correlated to taking this Lexapro, right? So yet that when the etiology to all of this was I had one adjustment life event, and yet that was it. And that carried me in the system through 20 years of still taking the same medication. Which it is not to be meant to be taken that long either, by the way. Right. But right. So when you say ripple effect, I think about the beginning and what symptoms we have, right? I have an event. I'm depressed. I'm sad. Yeah. My boyfriend dumped me. Right. Terry, you talk about like just total being lethargic the second you stop moving, like you're done. Right. And all these things that happen. And then we have events that happen while we're taking the medications. Medical impacts that happen, physiological impacts that happen. And then the next ripple of how do I get off of this? Because that was never a discussion once.
Can I add in one quick thing? When you said, you know, you're on it for 20 years or whatever, when does maintenance come? One of the things that we were trained to tell people about this, and this goes down into compliance, which is not informed consent, it's manipulation. Well, if you're feeling better, why would you want to get off of it?
Yeah.
That's one of the things we would tell people. And I'm like, because I think innately people know when they feel better or they're feeling worse. And when someone feels better, we need to listen to them talk about their feeling better, you know, just like we need to listen to them when they say, I'm not feeling good, you know? So that piece of it, it's like such manipulative language that we had, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous, it is an industry-wide practice to say stuff like that, and that is like generation, like psychology, generation,
intergenerational, you know, trauma through psychology, right? since forever.
I mean, the other one, this just kind of popped into my mind too, another manipulation tactic that we would tell people is a lot of these medications would cause metabolic weight gain. And that metabolic weight gain could be anything from 10 pounds to 100 or more. Mm-hmm. And so people would come in with this metabolic weight gain. And what would we say to them? Mm-hmm. Well, would you rather be overweight and not depressed?
Or
overweight or not depressed or depressed? And underweight and regular weight. I don't know. I'm getting it all mixed up. But, you know, I mean, it was you know, would you rather have this or this, as if this pill is going to create happiness? But yet, you know, the other thing, you go to the doctor and they want you to lose weight, but suddenly you're 50 pounds overweight because you're on this medication that causes it. You can't lose it. So again, who's the problem?
Yes. And that's something like, and I would be so blunt with people. I said it too. I said, would you rather be fat?
Because
my patients would come in and, oh, Ms. Schmitz, I've gained so much weight and this and that. And it absolutely is from that antidepressant that you're taking, right? And absolutely. I say, well, would you rather weigh 25 pounds more or would you rather be dead? because they started on this medication because they were so suicidal, right? I mean, and I'm not gonna, I don't want to take that intervention away from people as well. And I have to put that little clause in there because when someone is at that space in their life, I'm not going to say this is not a good thing to even try either, especially if you really truly can't live. I mean, you are at that space where, and that's the people we worked with, right? They were each day it was a struggle to stay alive. And so I don't want to take the idea of a medication from someone who's in such a bad space away as a possibility. But I would say that, and I think about it now, and I said, well, would you rather be 20 pounds heavier or would you rather be dead? Because 2 months ago, you tried to kill yourself and we started you on this. Talk about a horrible statement, like just to say that.
Fear-mongering, like it such is. Fear-mongering.
It's fear-mongering, right? It's it's the idea of the fear factor, right? You know, the 28 days we throw a kid in the jail and let them go and see what real jail life is like, scared straight, right? The scared straight approach is so ineffective. And we know that, even research shows us that. And yet, we're taught to say that in a certain way. And that was like the meds were the savior, right? I was in an environment where I was taught that. The psychiatrist that I worked with when I oversaw the mental health unit supervising it in the prison, she was my right-hand man. I was her right-hand man. But as the supervisor, that was always part of the treatment plan. We didn't have a nutritionist in there, you know. We had a rec therapist who would help a little bit with recreational activities. But if we would bring someone in that focused on food or supplements or amino acids, or, oh my gosh, we get laughed at like Terry did. There's a story from the, it's like, yeah, it is not possible. I got laughed at
because I brought it in. Yes, I did.
You did. Omegas did. Do not have anything to do with aggression, Terry.
No.
Nothing.
I know that now. I was spanked in a meeting once.
You were. Yeah. But that was, we our relationships with psychiatrists were very close. And they were. And that was always part of the treatment. Always. It was odd when it wasn't.
I don't ever remember a time that it wasn't part of someone's treatment plan.
No, I mean, even in the last facility where I worked, 75% of the patients were on a psychiatric medication. 75%. So
I really appreciate you both sharing your personal stories with this too, because that's one common denominator I see a lot in doctors and other clinicians who have sort of decided to leave the system. Is oftentimes it seems like it happens because then they have their own experience with this and go, wait a minute. There's a lot more to this than what we've been taught to tell patients when you experience it firsthand. Like that's one thing I often, you know, tell people when they're trying to find a new thyroid doctor. It's like, if you can find someone who has Hashimoto's or has hypothyroidism or Graves' disease, who's been through it and knows it's really not as simple to treat as what the doctors are taught in medical school, which is basically just normalize TSH. You know, there's more to it. There's nuance. It's, you know, often takes a holistic approach, not just medication, but also food and lifestyle for people to really feel okay. But that personal experience, it seems to be a really common driver for people to say, whoa, time out. I don't want to participate in this anymore. Hey Thyroid Thrivers, Jenny here. I just want to pop in with a quick message that if you're listening to today's show and thinking, I'm ready to learn more about this thyroid healing journey, about what foods to eat, what foods to avoid, one of the best ways to do it is to sign up for my free thyroid-friendly grocery guide. This features over 130 delicious, colorful, nutrient-dense foods we can eat. So this list is gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, refined sugar-free, and free of processed foods. Because there can be a lot of emphasis, especially when we're starting out, on all that we can't have and all that we're supposed to avoid. But really, the purpose of thyroid-friendly eating is to incorporate more of the good stuff. So to grab your copy instantly of the Thyroid Friendly Grocery Guide, you can go to hypothyroidchef.com/grocery. I'll send you the guide and you'll also get put on my free weekly newsletter. So you'll get fresh recipes, you'll get updates on the podcast, you'll get personal notes from me, special discounts, and all kinds of goodies that I send out to my mailing list for free just once a week. So go ahead and grab that at hypothyroidchef.com/grocery. Okay, back to the show.
So thank you. I can't participate in that anymore. I just can't do it. I can't. I wanted to mention one last thing. Jenny, you had mentioned something about nutrition changing, like the ideas around nutrition can change and we have to be with. That's one thing our profession is horrible at, even though we try to say, you know, you got to be better with change, you know, all this with our clients. Our field changes like a snail stuck in molasses in January, you know.
Oh, that's good, Terry. Snail and molasses in January.
January. Except, well, it's 50 degrees out today. It's
okay,
February.
Today doesn't so count, doesn't but count. any other January or February.
But it's such a slow, like the interventions, the only thing that might change is some medication, a new med might come out. But as far as interventions go,
yeah,
it is so slow to change. Like when you hinge on people that are, you know, 100 years ago as, you know, our basis for psychology, you wouldn't see a doctor doing that, would you? Like, still, like, leaning into something, a practice from 100 years ago, you know, that would not happen, but it happens in psychology. And I think about, like, EMDR therapy for trauma, right? So that still is, you know, questionable. It's getting better now, but that was developed in the 80s. And, you know, I'd like to believe that was 10 years ago, but it wasn't, you know, so, but we're still, there's still,
it's okay. She just had a birthday.
Yeah,
she's in her head a little. It's fine.
Exactly. There's still skepticism around things that are, you know, 30 years old, but not 100. We have to, you know, we have to hinge back on, you know, the tried and true. And I'm like, as if we have not evolved as people, as a society, like nothing has changed. It's, to me, it's just fascinating. And that's part of where I think critical thinking is lost, because when we still have to like look back and just do what they did back then to be relevant today, it's ridiculous. When you go into a job interview or something, they're still asking, this is a, if you guys don't know what this question is, it is the most annoying. What is your theoretical orientation? Oh my God. That basically they're asking you, what theory from 100 million years ago do you hinge your practice on? And I'm like
I actually, Freud versus Jung or
stuff like that. Yes. Pretty much. This was probably, I don't know, 8 years ago or so. And I had like a little mini interview with, it was, I think it was some outsourcing contract position or whatever. And this kid, I say kid, he was probably in his 20s, interviewed me and asked me that question. And I burst out in laughing. And I said, are you kidding me? Are we still asking that question? And he was all flustered. Needless to say, I never heard from them again. But anyway, I thought, man, we are, how is this even a relevant question? Let alone our practice of psychology still is hinged on that stuff, you know, like, I don't get it. That's why I like nutrition, because it changes and it evolves and you're allowed to change your mind, you know, like, whereas in psychology, mental health, like if you don't stick to what is known, then you are doing it wrong. You know, like you're not allowed to think critically about these things. But anyway, that was my soapbox about that.
You bring up such a good point. And I've actually been kind of dying to ask you both about this, because this is something I'm really curious about as, you know, I call myself a lay person, not an expert, although I am a functional medicine health coach. I'm a thyroid advocate. You know, I have cooking expertise. I mean, I have some years under my belt in this realm. So, and I make it my job to try to educate people and therefore keep my ear to the ground, continue educating myself, learning, keeping that open mind. And I spend a lot of time looking at the scientific evidence, reading the papers and the journals, you know, through my layperson eyes, for whatever that's worth. And I always think about this almost like a burden, the burden of scientific evidence in conventional medicine and conventional psychology. You know, that's a big part of the basis and foundation, is things have to be evidence-based. But having spent a lot of time wading through those studies, there's so much contradiction and there's so many shoddily done studies. I also see experts online, you know, maybe they'll go into a study and they'll cherry pick one aspect of that study and take it out of context and then shout that through a megaphone to their giant social media following, sparking fear, you know, and to get followers and stuff. Then you go read, you click on the link to read that study and go, wait a minute, they completely are missing the big picture conclusion that this study came to. You know, how can we talk about that? Because there's this disturbing trend of this weaponizing of the whole, it's science, it's science, so you can't argue with it. And there's a lot of merit and a lot of value to scientific evidence. We can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, right?
Right.
But as somebody in my shoes, as a patient advocate and health coach, and, you know, like, what do we do with that? And as a patient too, so many of my coaching clients are like, there is so much conflicting information. And a lot of times all I can say is yes, there is.
Yes. Because there is, and we're going to have a whole episode on this, probably 16 episodes on this.
Oh, yes,
because
there's going to be a lot of
forever.
These.
Yes.
How do we navigate the first all that?
Well, but the first thing I think about is, who is the average consumer? You know, I mean, we used to have to write papers that had to be written at eighth grade levels, right? So because the average consumer is not a PhD, they are not researchers. And so to wade through all of that is really ridiculous. So they do rely on professionals to do it for them. And I go back into informed consent. So informed consent is when a professional care provider can kind of, you know, bring it down to a level that is understandable to the patient, right? Bring the research down to a level that they can clearly get information from, and not just one-sided information, right? So informed consent is all-sided information, right? Risks, benefits, and alternatives. Okay. So this is a huge problem. And I see it on social media a lot too. You'll have, you know, the lay person who thinks they know how to read research and they really don't, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a huge question. It's a huge problem. But what I'm going to say is, get curious about any research article that you read and don't take it as the end all be all, because I can guarantee you, if you have one research article that says, I don't know, ice cubes at noon are really good for your mental health, you're going to have another one that says hot water at noon is really good for your mental health. Okay. So there's going to be, you know, alternatives. And so it's about, which way do you want to try ice cubes or do you want to try hot water? You know, either one of them yielded pretty good results, you know, so go ahead and try it. Maybe it's not about either of them. Maybe it's because, you know, men had ice cubes and women had hot water. I don't know. So there's all these different innuendos in research, right? So my point about research is, put your critical thinking hats on, you know, take nothing at face value, right? Mm-hmm. So if you find a research article that says ice cubes are good for you at noon, how about you type in, you know, are ice cubes good for you at 5 p.m.? You know, like try to add to what you're researching, add a different lens, a different focus. And so you can step back and be like, okay, so I see all of this. I'm going to drink tea at 3, you know, screw you all. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, right? So, but you can find that same type of stuff when it comes down to psychiatric medications, right? Placebo outperforms antidepressants, right?
Yep.
Okay. So then you're going to find an article that says antidepressants outperform placebo, right? So which one do you want to look at? You know, right. Which one do you? Well, you can always, always, always look to see who wrote it. Who are, what's the affiliation of the people who wrote it?
That's,
you know, that's kind of number one,
that's
right?
Number one.
So yeah, if this is written by, you know, a pharmaceutical company and they're like, yes, psych meds outperform placebo, either you can discard it, right? Because it's biased. Generally, it's biased. People are going to say, well, how do you know it's biased just because they work for them? Because they work for them, you know, mm-hmm. like that's what yeah. they do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking at who publishes it, the journal, the people who authored it, the researchers, all that's like number one. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to view this. I don't know, Jen, you have anything else to add to that conversation?
No, you summarized pretty much everything I was going to say. I have the piece that I hit the most on is I question everything. All of it. You know, like I really do. And I was never in that space. It being in this space is a lot harder because it really is. You're paying attention to things you never paid attention to before. You think about things in a way you didn't before. You know, when we sit down and look at the DSM, which is the Bible, the diagnostic Bible that we use to diagnose someone, and the last version that came out, and you're looking at 80% of the people that contributed to the diagnoses, or 100% of the people that went into the depression diagnoses, were all paid by pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
That
to the millions of dollars.
It blows
not just like
your mind.
Bucks.
Yeah, it does. It blows your mind. So it's like, okay, how is there not a conflict of interest? So that is like a big, huge one. I think that one rocked my world a lot when I really started to dig more into that. Cause that's just oh my gosh.
The other one. Do you remember the other one is when we were looking at depression assessments. And so there's like some different diagnostic assessment type things
tests
to
that
give
I
to
do
your
with
clients.
People.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tests that we do with people. Like and testing. Then we're like, I'm like, Jen, did you see who authored these tests?
Yeah. And it's all pharmaceutical.
She goes, no.
Companies.
And I'm like, oh my God, it's pharmaceutical companies. Mm-hmm. When a pharmaceutical company authors a diagnostic assessment for depression, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. There's a huge problem. And that's one of them that we use. And doctor's offices use
frequently.
That as a screener too, mm-hmm. frequently.
Now, so I just learned this too. Like things. This was new for me in the last handful of months when I was doing a testing case. And Terry points this out and I'm looking at the assessment that I've been giving for years, like forever. And I'm like, oh, I've never noticed that. Like, so here we are, an assessment that leads to me diagnosing somebody. How can you tell me that I can't get curious about there possibly being a conflict of interest when it is authored and created by big pharma companies? Like,
so
that's
a huge part.
It is. And so for me, when you say if there's anything more, I have started to take the lens of being inquisitive on all of it. Nothing is at face value.
Right.
I take nothing really at face value anymore, and it feels good because then I can experiment a little. I can ask questions. I can get curious myself.
I think about like the high school courses that you wish they would still teach, or they should start teaching, like home ec, you know, how to cook and clean, balance your bank account and all that. How about a course called discernment? Online discernment, you know,
that would be great. The closest I got,
like, don't believe everything you hear or read or see from one expert, even if it is, you know, even if it's science, because yes, I've had the exact same experience, like nutrition people on Instagram saying, oh, well, this food additive is perfectly safe. And so it's totally fine for you to eat all these processed foods. And I've done the digging because I'm curious like that. And oh yeah, this person actually writes and works for Big Ag. This person doing the same, it's science. So you can't argue that these processed foods are perfectly fine for you to eat, is getting paid by the processed food industry. There's a lot of that happening. And another thing that Dr. Bianco shared with me was these studies, in order for them to be scientifically valid and have merit for the research, for changing the standards of care and all that, you're looking at about a minimum of $15 million for a double-blind placebo-controlled study that's actually done the right way. Who's got that kind of money laying around? Big pharma.
Big food, big pharma. Yeah.
Yeah, big, you know, and when you're investing that kind of money into a study, which is, this isn't like starting a business. It's not directly a money-making venture, but you want that study to be done so that it's likely to prove what you want it to prove, so that it sells your thing that you're selling and indirectly makes you, I mean, it's, yeah. I think
huge.
So many of us are all waking up to this in 2024 and going, wait a minute, that this has to come on. We've got to have some controls here so that there's not that conflict of interest. But I'd love to ask one more question. I know we're kind of running short on time here, but this sort of brings me to, like, okay, what can we do? What advice do you have for patients to avoid gaslighting, to advocate for themselves? Like, one thing that popped into my mind is our intuition that we've been trained to ignore. You know, does that ring true for you in your practice? Or what are other things that you can share with the listeners that might help us when, as we're medical consumers, I guess, you know, how can we protect ourselves from all the conflicting information and all this stuff that we've talked about today? Yeah.
Don't get gaslit. Number one,
don't do it.
If you feel it, it's true.
Okay? Go with your gut. I mean,
go with your gut. If you feel something in a certain way, that is true. Meaning, like, your body feels something. Like, if you feel fatigued, if you feel anxious, that's a real feeling. Don't get gaslit into it. Or if you know that this feeling is new to me, it feels like there's something else going on. Don't get gaslit into believing that it's not, that it's just psychological, right? And then I'm going to add in, don't gaslight yourself. Like, I can't even believe what I think is true. You know, like, get curious about yourself. I knew that I wasn't, my problems were not mental health related. I knew that. But if I weren't an empowered patient, I would have walked out of there with three prescriptions in one setting, you know, but I walked out of there crying, but, you know, take these and shove it, but I'm getting out of here. And then I cried in the parking lot for a while. But anyway, you know, because at that point I felt relatively helpless because I didn't know anybody to help me, you know, and it's hard to help yourself. So try to reach out to somebody that you can believe in, you know, but if you're hearing gaslighty type information, run the other way. You know, that just means that person doesn't understand you, or is unwilling, or doesn't have the capability to dig any deeper. You know, it's not always, again, you know, healthcare providers are bad and wrong. Sometimes they just don't have the resources or the capability or even the knowledge, you know?
Exactly.
So
yep. That's what I was going to say. Yep. Yep. You go with your gut, and you also be an empowered patient. And to part of doing that is actually allowing yourself to get curious about what you're noticing. And don't ignore it or chalk it up to something else. Just notice it, lean into it a little bit. Because the more you do that, the more curious you're going to get, and you'll get to your answer versus always just taking everything someone hands to you at face value. I tell my patients all the time, like, I may not be that right therapist for you. I've had many people leave because they don't appreciate, they don't appreciate that lens that I take, because they just want the answer. And I say, I'm sorry, but I'm not here to give you your answer. Your truth is not mine. I'm going to ask you all the questions to try to get you there, but you deserve to be inquisitive about this and figure it out. So what you're noticing matters. Anyone that tells you it doesn't, then they're not the right person for you, unless you don't want to see that and you just want the answer. You just want the label. You just want the pill. You just want the quick fix. Okay. Cause we, you know, that's a choice people have. But go with your gut and ask more questions.
I always say, get curious, be curious, get curious and stay there.
Curiosity saves the cat in this case.
It does. There ain't no dead cats up in here.
We don't like dead cats.
Awesome. Thank you so much for this really thought-provoking conversation. I know this has really expanded my thinking about this topic, and I know it's been helpful for the listeners. Where can people find both of you online?
So you can find, I want to talk about the podcast first. So right now our podcast is launching on Instagram at the Gaslit Truth Podcast. So we also have a YouTube channel, the Gaslit Truth Podcast. It's all the same. And we'll be on any place you listen to podcasts very soon. Aside from that, you can find us both on Instagram and TikTok. I'll give my handle. It's always the same, Dr. Tara Lynn. There it is.
So original.
TikTok and Instagram. I know it's very original. Jen?
My handle on TikTok is Therapist Jen. And then I am Candidly Unapologetic Jen on Instagram. That one's a whole mouthful. It's kind of obnoxious, but yeah.
We're there. In a different space. I'll be sure made that one. But anyway,
I'll put all those in the show notes for people.
Thank you so much.
Find and connect with and follow you. We're very excited for your new podcast and for, you know, another space where these important dialogues and discourses and exploration of ideas and conflicting ideas and all of it, the gaslit truth can actually happen. So thank you so much. And I wish you the best of luck. I'm excited for that to get fired up. So
thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jenny.
I had so much fun today. Once again, the podcast is The Gaslit Truth, soon to be available on your favorite podcast platform. And I will share all the links in the show notes for any of you who are interested in connecting with Dr. Tara Lynn or Jen Schmitz today. Thanks all of you for tuning in for another episode of Thyroid Healthy Bites. If you've enjoyed the show, please don't forget to like, subscribe, or leave a review. Your support truly does help so much. So thank you in advance for taking a quick moment to do that as we wrap up today's episode. I'm Ginny Mahar wishing you happy cooking, happy thriving, and the best of health. See you next time.